Okay, Malik, picture this. You're dating someone. You are fully committed. You've bought the ring. You've deleted the apps. You are ready to go. But you have never actually seen this person.
Miles, that is not dating. That is being the victim of a very elaborate catfish scheme. That is an episode of a daytime talk show waiting to happen.
Bear with me. So you text them. Hey, are you real? Can we meet for coffee? Just 5 minutes? And not only do they not show up, but their friends call you a terrible person for even asking.
Right. I'm toxic because I wanted proof of life.
Exactly. And that absurd scenario is actually the heavy-hitting philosophical topic on the table tonight. We are diving into a piece titled, When Seeking Assurance is Labeled as Sin, and it tackles one of the biggest elephants in the theological room, divine hiddenness.
And let me tell you, this isn't just about why is the sky empty. This is about the emotional fallout of asking that question. It gets spicy because we have to talk about J.L. Schellenberg.
Schellenberg, the man who basically turned the where is God question into a logic equation that keeps theologians up at night.
He really did. So back in 1993, Schellenberg published his landmark book, Divine Hiddenness and Human Reason, and he laid out a concept called non-resistant non-belief. It's a technical term, but it's crucial.
Break it down. Is that like when I non-resistantly don't believe I can afford a Ferrari?
Not quite. Imagine a guy. Let's call him Dave. Dave isn't angry at God. He's not trying to sin. Dave genuinely wants to know if God is there. He's open. He's listening. But he hears crickets.
So Dave is the guy waiting by the phone.
Dave is waiting by the phone. And Schellenberg's argument is, if God is perfectly loving, keyword, perfectly, he would want a relationship with Dave. Relationships require connection. Therefore, God wouldn't hide from Dave. Since Dave exists and is still waiting, a perfectly loving God must not exist. Boom.
It's the if he wanted to, he would argument applied to the creator of the universe. That is brutal.
It is. But the article we're looking at today takes it a step further. It points out that the system doesn't just ignore Dave. It blames Dave. It says, Dave, the fact that you can't see the invisible boyfriend means you aren't looking hard enough.
Which is classic gaslighting. I'm not hiding. You're just blind because you're wicked. The article calls this the shift of blame. It absolves the powerful party, God, by dumping all the responsibility on the finite, confused human.
And historically, this has been the go-to move. I mean, look at the Reformation era. You had Martin Luther, who was a brilliant guy, but absolutely weaponized skepticism against his opponents while simultaneously treating doubt within his own camp as a moral failure.
Right. Doubt wasn't just an intellectual pause. It was treated like treason. If you question the narrative, you aren't curious, you're rebellious.
Exactly. And psychology backs up how damaging this is. There's research on religious doubt showing that when communities label questioning as sinful, it doesn't create stronger believers. It creates anxiety and depression. You get people suppressing their questions not because they found answers, but because they're terrified of being kicked out of the tribe.
That's the new coercion the article talks about. It's wild because the standard theological defense for why God hides is to preserve our free will, right? If I showed up in all my glory, you'd be forced to believe in me.
Right, the overwhelming presence defense. Like, if Godzilla walked into downtown Tokyo, you don't choose to believe in Godzilla anymore. You just run. God supposedly hides so we can freely choose to love him.
But the article points out the irony. If you hide and then tell people they'll go to hell if they don't believe in you despite the hiding, you have reintroduced coercion. You're just using social fear instead of a giant lizard foot.
It's coercion with extra steps, and it destroys the very definition of love. Think about the three things the article says a relationship needs. Presence, availability, and assurance. If I told my wife, I love you, but I'm going to vanish for 30 years, and if you doubt I exist, it's because you're a sinner. I would be single very quickly.
You'd be worse than single. You'd be a cautionary tale on a true crime podcast.
But this brings up the Doubting Thomas rebranding. Poor Thomas.
Justice for Thomas. And the narrative, Thomas says, I need to see the holes in the hands. He demands empirical data. And while Jesus does say, blessed are those who have not seen, he still shows up. He gives the proof.
He didn't say, Thomas, you wicked rebel, get out. He met the demand. But modern seekers are often told that demanding that same transparency is arrogant. The article flips that beautifully. It suggests that asking, where are you, isn't a sin. It's actually the most honest thing you can do.
It's a demand for fairness. If we are finite and God is infinite, the bridge has to be built from the infinite side. You can't ask the ant to build a bridge to the moon.
And when you shame the ant for not having a rocket ship, well, that's just mean.
The article wraps up with this powerful idea that the greatest act of faith might not be quiet acceptance. It might be the courage to say, this relationship feels one-sided, and I deserve better transparency.
It's replacing blind faith with reason meets reverence. It's a refusal to accept a relationship defined by unjust obligation.
And honestly, if there is a God who values truth, you'd think he'd appreciate the honesty of a skeptic more than the fake certainty of someone just trying to avoid social awkwardness.
Absolutely. If you're out there waiting by the phone, know that asking why haven't you called doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you human. Malik, thanks for breaking the silence with me tonight.
Always a pleasure to be seen and heard, Miles.